It is chapter 3 of Habakkuk that hopefully we will conclude, but it's a couple of weeks since we were last in Habakkuk, so let's just have a quick resume of material we've covered so far. There were two questions that Habakkuk asked of God. The first question was really, bring in mind all the violence and the sin and the iniquity in this land, God, why are you doing nothing? So he had two questions, and God answered first of all, Habakkuk, pin your ears back. You won't even believe what I'm going to do to this country. I'm going to send a horrible, terrible invasion of your people. And true enough, Habakkuk couldn't believe that a holy, righteous God would do that. So his second question was, how could you? You're holy and you're righteous. How can you send an evil nation like that of Babylon against your people? After all, we might be bad, but we're not that bad. So God had to correct Habakkuk's philosophy of life. And in chapter 2 of Habakkuk, we came across the five woes as God gave some detail in his second answer. And in those five woes, which we spent some time on last time, the first woe was woe to the plunderer. Then it was woe to the greedy and the proud. The third woe was woe to the murderer and the one who enslaves. The fourth woe was woe to the one who corrupts others. And we saw how Babylon does corrupt other nations. And five was woe to the idolater, woe to false religion. At the end of which we saw then God in his holy temple ruling the earth. And so that brings us to Habakkuk chapter 3. So two questions, two answers, five woes, and then the final chapter of the book. Chapter 3 and verse 1. A prayer of Habakkuk the prophet on Shigionoth. The meaning of the word Shigionoth appears to be a little bit difficult to come by. My margin says exact meaning unknown, but Mr. Bullinger in his companion Bible says it means loud cries of danger. Loud cries of danger. And this basically is a song. If we look at the very last verse of chapter 3, the very last portion, it says, to the chief musician with my stringed instruments. So this third chapter was, in essence, a song. It was set to music, and no doubt, you know, some thousands of years ago, it would be sung from time to time with these stringed instruments. And being a song, being perhaps a poem in that sense, the language is not necessarily always absolutely literal, because, like most songs, you occasionally choose phrases to imply or impress a meaning rather than necessarily because they are exactly specific, because it's a song, and songs are a little bit different from normal day-to-day speech or technical material. So this appears to be a song bearing in it loud cries of danger, if we take Mr. Bullinger's meaning as being the correct one. And I think as we go through it, we'll see there are plenty of cries of danger coming, because the book of Habakkuk is bringing to a grand finale the prophecies of the next 5 to 10 years. We first of all read in chapter 1 about the Great Tribulation striking Britain and America, the invasion of our nations. Then after that, Babylon itself gets a counterattack launched against it by the nations of the East. And it too gets devastated, virtually destroyed, suffers huge loss of life. And then we move into the more detailed events of the Day of the Lord. And that's largely what we find in Habakkuk chapter 3. Verse 2, O Eternal, I have heard your speech and was afraid. I've heard everything you said, God, and frankly, says Habakkuk, I am terrified. You've just gone through so much horrific detail of what is surely going to come to pass at the latter days, at the end, that frankly, God, I am afraid. You've scared the pants off me. O Eternal, Revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known in wrath. Remember mercy. You know, don't forget God, he says, to be merciful even in this time of wrath and danger and punishment and correction that is coming. It says, revive your work in the midst of the years. Basically, that would imply preserve or keep alive the work of delivering your people. As you'll see a bit later on, you know, God is going to deliver Israel, America and Britain from captivity, from their days of distress, from their time of trouble. And Habakkuk's just looking and thinking, you know, this is grim. What God's told me about in these visions is really quite frightening. And I'm sure God won't forget to be merciful, but you know, O Eternal, you know, please do remember mercy in these coming years of wrath. Revive your work, or other meanings are preserve or keep alive your work. And that work is basically, of course, you know, God is working with people. He's working with you and me. He's working with Israel. And Habakkuk does not want God to forget that work when things get really black and desperately bad upon this earth. Verse 3. God came from Teman, the Holy One from Mount Paran. So almost before he begins his next section of this song, Habakkuk just stops to remember some incidents from the past. You know, there was a time when God came from Teman, when the Holy One of Israel, the Creator God, Jehovah, came from Mount Paran. Now, what's that all about? What was in Habakkuk's mind there when he suddenly interjected before the details, let me remember this great God, and something he did marvelous in the past? Well, if we hold our place there, so put your $50 bill just in that page, and turn to Deuteronomy chapter 33. Deuteronomy chapter 33. And verse 2. Deuteronomy 33 and verse 2. And he said, this is Moses now, Deuteronomy 33 verse 2, the Eternal came from Sinai and dawned on them from Seir. He shone forth from Mount Paran, and he came with 10,000s of saints. So we see a reference here to Sinai, to Seir, to Mount Paran. And this is a reference to Mount Sinai when God came down, of course, and met ancient Israel after they were released, you know, from Egyptian captivity. They came all the way out to Mount Sinai. They were given the Ten Commandments there. God worked with them powerfully. And of course, the story we know is that God performed amazing miracles, intervened on Israel's behalf, destroyed their enemies, brought them into the promised land, looked after them, blessed them, prospered them, did all those things for them. In other words, God intervened and performed mighty miracles to protect his people. And Habakkuk is looking back at this time, so still in Deuteronomy 33, the Lord came from Sinai and dawned on them from Seir. He shone forth from Mount Paran, and he came with 10,000s of saints. From his right hand came a fiery law for them. Yes, he loves the people. All his saints are in your hand. They sit down at your feet. Everyone receives your words. Moses commanded a law for us, a heritage of the congregation of Jacob. And he, that would be God, was king in Jeshurun, meaning Israel, when the leaders of the people were gathered and all the tribes of Israel together. So what seems to be in Habakkuk's mind was this memory that God did once upon a time deliver his people by mighty marvels, by mighty miracles, by mighty wonders. And he anticipates God doing that again. So back to Habakkuk. If find you a $50 bill. God came from Teman, the Holy One, from Mount Paran, so that's the area of Sinai. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. His brightness was like the light, or like the sunlight, the New American Standard Bible says. He had rays flashing from his hand, and there his power was hidden. So Habakkuk has this vision or picture in his mind of God's arrival, just like God came once upon a time from Mount Sinai to restore and deliver his people. So likewise, there is coming a time at the end when God will once again come with great glory and power and might, with mighty miracles and wonders to again deliver his people. And he says, you know, his brightness was like the light, like the sunlight, and we know that. I think we know from the book of Revelation that Jesus' face shines like the sun in its strength. His whole body is brilliant and glows. It says he had rays flashing from his hand. I think the King James may say horns. And there his power was hidden, or in a sense almost, you know, partially concealed. And, you know, God has so much power that it would not be possible for us to actually see it all. Even in a vision, I guess, Habakkuk couldn't see it all. And God's amazing power, which he's about to display as he intervenes in human events, is incredible. And in fact, it won't take very much of God's power to sort out the nations of this world. The leaders of, you know, Russia and China and America, Britain, may think they're pretty strong and powerful and important. The military men, the commanders and generals may think that they're hydrogen bombs and other devices they've got, the secret ones we know nothing about, are pretty powerful. But, you know, God's got so much power, even concealed, that it won't take very much for him to blow this earth and its people to smithereens if he chose to do so. Okay, verse 5. And now we get down to, in the next few verses, in song, Habakkuk sings about the events that appear to take place at the very end of this age. Now, we've seen the tribulation in chapter 1. We've seen the counterattack against the beast power. And now we come to what appear to be the seven plagues, the seven vials that complete God's wrath. If you just hold your place there, get your $50 bill out, and turn to the book of Revelation. Chapter 15. Book of Revelation, chapter 15. And when you get here, stick another $50 bill in, because we'll be moving back here off and on for the next half hour or so. So look at Revelation chapter 15, and here we're cutting in to the story in Revelation after the seven seals have been opened, after the seven trumpets have been blown, or at least the first six have been blown. And of course, in a few days' time, we'll be looking perhaps at the incidents and events surrounding the Feast of Trumpets. But here in chapter 15, we come to the very end of the trumpet period, when we come to the seventh trumpet and the seven vials or bowls that are poured out. Verse 1, then I saw another sign in heaven, great and marvelous, seven angels having the seven last plagues, for in them the wrath of God is complete. You know, God's been sorting things out for six trumpets now, but he comes to the seventh one and the seven last plagues. They complete or fill up God's wrath. Chapter 16 and verse 1. Then I heard a loud voice from the temple saying to the seven angels, go and pour out the bowls, or some translations say vials, of the wrath of God on the earth. Okay, so in prophecy in Revelation chapter 15 and 16, we have come to the time after the trumpets have been blown, where God is pouring out his seven last plagues, completing, fulfilling his complete wrath on this earth because of what it's been doing. Okay, back now to Habakkuk, but keep your place there. went back to Revelation 16 a number of times. Habakkuk chapter 3, verse 5. And now having, shall we say, introduced the great Creator God, who came from the Mount Sinai area and once delivered his people, having seen God's great glory and power, his brightness and might, Habakkuk now goes into song about precisely what God is going to do. And I think what we'll see, pretty much, as we go through the next few verses, is that the seven plagues that make up God's wrath are described here in Habakkuk chapter 3. I think we'll see that. We have to remember that in some ways prophecy is not totally clear ahead of time. We have to have a little tiny bit of using our imagination. We have to look a little bit at mild speculation, I guess we would say, and just see if these things make sense to us. But verse 5, before him went pestilence, and fever, it says, followed at his feet. So, talking of God's intervention now, it says that before God, in front of him, goes pestilence, disease, a fever follows right behind him. The Good News Bible says he sends disease before himself. The New American Standard Bible says plague comes after him. Okay, so the first thing that's mentioned here, number one, is pestilence, disease, plague. Now, back to Revelation 16, let's read about the first of the bowls or vials that make up the wrath of God. 16 and verse 2. So the first angel went and poured out his bowl upon the earth, that's the whole earth, and a foul and loathsome sore came upon the men who had the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. Now the Greek there for a foul and loathsome sore implies vicious, malignant, ulcerous wounds. Something really painful and vile and extremely unpleasant. And it's poured out upon the whole earth, on all the people who have the mark of the beast. And it's quite likely that most people in the end time will have chosen to take the mark of the beast, because without that mark, you will not be able to trade, buy, sell, and so on. So here's talking about a time coming of a vile, ulcerous, vicious, horrible plague, pestilence, disease, striking the world, including, of course, those who've been attacking Britain and America. So, although I won't necessarily say it's exactly what Habakkuk is referring to, it's rather interesting that Habakkuk's first reference to God's intervention is to these plagues and diseases, and that's exactly what we see here. Okay, back to Habakkuk. Verse 6 now. He, that's talking of God, stood and measured the earth. You know, God has a good look round, shall we say, surveys what's ahead of him, double checks what needs to be done. He looked and startled the nations, nations plural. So we're talking here about God looking over the whole world, and he's going to do something that's going to amaze, set back, and dumbfound the nations. And the everlasting mountains were scattered, or some translations say the mountains were shattered. We're talking here about the actual mountains themselves quaking and splitting, you know, quite frightening to behold. The perpetual hills bowed, or some say collapsed. So we're talking about, you know, major geological movements. His ways are everlasting. Verse 7, I saw the tents or dwellers of Cushan in affliction. The curtains of the land of Midian trembled. So Habakkuk in vision sees that the people of Cushan and Midian are trembling under affliction, under distress. Now, who are those people? Well, again, hard to be totally dogmatic, but there's good evidence that these are the people of Russia, who will have been involved in much of the previous fighting and warring. And it seems that they are singled out here in Habakkuk's vision as being terrified and under enormous affliction of what's being poured out upon them as God corrects and punishes and puts right verse 8. O Eternal, were you displeased with the rivers? Was your anger against the rivers? Was your wrath against the sea, that you rode on your horses, your chariots of salvation? So Habakkuk picks out here that there's something that God's doing to the rivers and the seas. Because he says, God, in what way have they offended you? You know, why have you attacked, it seems, the rivers and the sea? Is your wrath against them? He can see what God's doing, but he perhaps doesn't understand entirely what God's motive is here. But he says, well, why is it displeased with the rivers and the seas? What have they done? Well, hold your place there. Back to Revelation 16. And let's pick up the second and third plagues, the second and third bowls or vials. Verse 3, Revelation 16. Then the second angel poured out his bowl on the sea, and it became blood as of a dead man, which sounds quite revolting. Blood of a living man might be a bit better, you know, sort of thin and full of life and so on, but blood of a corpse, I guess, is sort of thick and gooey and stagnant and decaying, and every living creature in the sea died. Verse 4. Then the third angel poured out his bowl on the rivers and springs of water, and they became blood. So interesting, in a sense, that Habakkuk refers to God in some way punishing the rivers and the sea, and here we see the second and third bowls poured out in the wrath of God, being turning the sea and rivers into blood. So there appears to be a close correspondence. Okay, back to Habakkuk. Picking up the story now in verse 9. Your bow was made quite ready. Talking of God here, and obviously the bow was your bow and arrow, one of the major tools of warfare in ancient times. And so Habakkuk and this song, as he prophesies in song about the future, talks of God being ready for battle. His bow is quite ready. Of course, I don't know that God will use a piece of wood with a bit of string over it. But the weapons of God are available, and they are unsheathed, and God is ready for battle, which we'll see very shortly. Oaths were sworn over your arrows. There's a few different translations of this verse. It does appear, I think the King James says, oaths were sworn over your tribes. And there's, I think, a hint here that in this song Habakkuk is remembering that, you know, God, you have promised. You have promised, you know, ancient Israel, the tribes of Israel, that you would, in the fullness of time, deliver them from their enemies. And I'm really expecting that to come to pass, because you swore oaths over the tribes, and they must come to pass. Then it says, Selah, which means pause at this point, and think carefully about what you've just read. You know, God's about to go to battle. He's already intervening, but he's made promises to the tribes of Israel, which cannot be broken. Carrying on, you divided the earth with rivers, which may be implying earthquakes, because that's what, generally speaking, divides the land and the mountains and so on. The mountains saw you and trembled. So again, earthquakes imply perhaps volcanoes. The overflowing of the water passed by. The deep uttered its voice and lifted its hands on high. You know, if a robber comes in with a gun and says, stick him up, we know that we lift our hands up on high. It's a sign of giving in, of submission. And it implies here almost that the great ocean depths even hold their hands up and submit to the power, you know, of their great creator God. The sun and moon stood still in their habitation. At the light of your arrows they went, at the shining of your glittering spear. Now, there's an interesting reference that I think we'll recognize took place once upon a time. Here's a situation where, you know, God is in action, and to sort of support God's activity, the sun and the moon themselves stand still. They don't move. And perhaps other things happen in the heavens as well. At the light of your arrows they went, at the shining of your glittering spear. So God's weapons of warfare, his bow, his arrows, his glittering spear, all mentioned here in the context of, amongst other things, the sun and moon standing still. Okay, I think we can look at an illustration of that way back in the book of Joshua, chapter 10. And we remember that the things written down in the past were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the age have come. So what we see in the past very often has a relevance today or even in the future. Joshua chapter 10, and we pick up the story in verse 10. So the Eternal routed them before Israel, killed them with a great slaughter at Gibeon. So, you know, God makes war at times. And when God makes war, he makes war. He is successful. His weapons, you don't turn them back. Well, you don't want God on your bad side, really. And so these enemies of Israel, God's taking care of them, as only God can do. Chased them along the road that goes to Beth Horon, and struck them down as far as Azekah and Makeda. Verse 11. And it happened, as they fled before Israel, and were on the descent of Beth Horon, that the Eternal cast down large hailstones from heaven on them, as far as Azekah, and they died. There were more who died from the hailstones than those whom the children of Israel killed with the sword. It says hailstones in my New King James Version. The Hebrew just merely says great stones. And in all likelihood, these are more like meteors, meteorites flashing out of the sky by the thousands. And of course, you know, if a 100-pound piece of rock comes out of the sky and brains you, that's the end of your interest in any battle. And of course, God's well able to send thousands or tens of thousands, or if necessary, millions of meteors down on the earth, big enough to actually, you know, land and destroy anything in front of them. Verse 12, then Joshua spoke to the Eternal in the day when the Eternal delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel, and he said in the sight of Israel, sun, stand still over Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Ajalon. And amazingly, so the sun stood still, and the moon stopped, till the people had revenge upon their enemies. Is this not written in the book of Jasher? So the sun stood still in the midst of heaven, and did not hasten to go down for about a whole day. Maybe either 12 hours or 24 hours. And there has been no day like that before it or after it that the Eternal heeded the voice of a man, for the Eternal fought for Israel. But looking at Habakkuk, it seems that there is a day coming pretty much like that, because we see here in Habakkuk that the sun and moon stood still, as it did happen way back in the days of Joshua. I mean, can you imagine that? You know, the sun doesn't go down in the afternoon. It's high noon, so to speak. And an hour later, it's still high noon. And 3 hours later, it's still high noon. 12 hours later, it's still high noon. And of course, if you think about it, whilst it's high noon over Joshua, way over in, shall we say, China, it's been dark now for about 24 hours, 28 hours. And the Chinese, of course, are probably panicking, wondering if the sun will ever arise again. And there are many historical references. Two nations that were in the dark for a couple of days, as far as they could make out, and had no idea what was going on. Okay, so we see here in Habakkuk these sun and moon standing still as God gets into battle. Let's turn now to Revelation 16 again. And we read verses 8 through 10 this time. Revelation 16, verse 8. Then the fourth angel poured out his bowl on the sun, and power was given to him, the sun, to scorch men with fire. And men were scorched with great heat, and they blasphemed the name of God, who has power over these plagues, and they did not repent and give him glory. So the fourth vial or bowl was something strange happening to the sun. Perhaps it stood still a great while, and perhaps its heat was multiplied manyfold. Verse 10, then the fifth angel poured out his bowl on the throne of the beast, and his kingdom became full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues because of the pain, and they blasphemed the God of heaven because of their pains and their sores, and did not repent of their deeds. So the fourth and fifth vials or bowls, something strange happening to the sun and presumably the moon. So again, a sort of an indication that what Habakkuk is talking about, the sun and moon standing still, these strange events happening in the sky and to the planetary bodies, appears to be mirrored here in Revelation 16, in the seven plagues that make up God's wrath. Plague number four, the sun, something strange happens to it. And plague number five, darkness is affected in some way. Okay, back to Habakkuk. And we're in verse 12. You marched through the land in indignation. You trampled the nations, plural, in anger. I'm going to stop there for a moment. That's just a few words. But, I mean, just think what that implies. We're talking here about the God of enormous power who's done marvelous things in the past for Israel. And here Habakkuk says, you marched. I don't know what marching is, don't we? It's what armies tend to do. You marched through the land in indignation. One translation says, in fury. You trampled, you trampled the nations, plural, in your anger. So we don't want to hurry over that, because that's talking of the most powerful being in the entire universe getting very physically involved with the nations of this world and being extremely angry with them because of their stupidity, because of their iniquity, because of their utter foolishness, because of their rebellion, and because they're about to destroy themselves. Okay, let's hold it there and go back to Revelation chapter 16. And see if we can find a parallel in these seven plagues. Okay, so we're seeing here that God's intervening in a most powerful, dramatic way to the nations of the earth and really making war against them, even marching against them. Revelation 16, picking up the story in verse 12. Then the sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates, and its water was dried up, so that the way of the kings from the east might be prepared. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs coming out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. For they are spirits of demons performing signs which go out to the kings of the earth and of the whole world to gather them to the battle of that great day of God Almighty. So all the nations of the earth, all the kings and leaders and presidents and prime ministers, all gathering together for what? For the battle of that great day of God Almighty. Verse 16, and they, the demons, gathered them together to the place called in Hebrew Armageddon. And we've all heard something about Armageddon. A place, but signifying and picturing the most almighty battle of all man's life, the last 6,000 years. Verse 17, so it's the battle of the great day of God Almighty, and let's just say that God's heavily involved in that battle, and by the time he's finished, he is the victor. And that's what Habakkuk is foreseeing. God marching in indignation and fury against all the nations of the world. Verse 17, then the seventh angel poured out his bowl into the air, And a loud voice came out of the temple in heaven from the throne saying, "It is done. It is finalized. It is finished." And there were noises and thunderings and lightnings. And there was a great earthquake, such a mighty and great earthquake as had not occurred since men were on the earth. Now the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations worldwide fell. And great Babylon was remembered before God to give her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his, God's, wrath. So God marches in fury, in indignation against Babylon and against the world's nations who are rebelling against him. Verse 20, "Then every island fled away and the mountains were not found," talking of major upheaval in the geology of the earth, "and great hail," or perhaps meteors from heaven, "fell upon men, every stone about the weight of a talent." My margin says that's about 75 pounds. That's a big boulder to land on you from, 100 miles up. "And men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail or these stones, since that plague was exceedingly great." Now, how many of these great stones or hailstones came out of the sky? 10,000? A million? 500 million? It was an exceedingly great plague. God marching in his indignation. Whilst we're here, just look across at Revelation 14. Pick up the story in verse 17. So Revelation 14, verse 17, we'll see much the same language being used here. "Then another angel came out of the temple which is in heaven, he also having a sharp sickle. And another angel came out from the altar, who had power over fire, and he cried with a loud cry to him with the sharp sickle, saying, 'Thrust in your sharp sickle, and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe.'" So was this talking of some harvest time, some agricultural event to take place? No, it's all just, it's poetic language, shall we say. Verse 19, "So the angel thrust his sickle into the earth, and gathered the vine of the earth, and threw it into the great winepress of the wrath of God. And the winepress was trampled outside the city of Jerusalem, and blood came out of the winepress up to the horses' bridles for 1,600 furlongs, nearly 200 miles in the Kidron Valley, just to the east of the city of Jerusalem. So you see here, trampling taking place. See the verse 20, the winepress was trampled and blood emanated from that trampling in God's great wrath. So back now to Habakkuk, I think we can see how all that seems to tie in pretty closely with what we just read in verse 12, Habakkuk 3, verse 12. "You marched through the land in indignation," or wrath, "and you trampled the nations in anger." God will bring all the nations together in this end time, and he'll deal with them, pretty much once and for all. Verse 13. "You went forth for the salvation of your people, for salvation with your anointed." So, God is not going to forget his people Israel, and perhaps those of the believers who are, for whatever reasons, not where they should be. "You went forth for the salvation, for the deliverance of your people, for salvation with your anointed. You struck the head from the house of the wicked by laying bare from foundation to neck." That is, again, somewhat poetic language, as you might expect in a song. "You struck the head." That could imply the top man, the leader, the one who is the head, from the house of the wicked, by laying bare from foundation to neck. "You thrust through with his own arrows the head," or the chief, "of his villages." Now, I've got another translation of that particular passage there from the Good News Bible. I think it's a fairly free and easy translation, but it might help us to just see what Habakkuk's referring to there. So where it reads, "You struck the head," down to thrusting through his own arrows the head of his villages, it reads, You struck down the leader of the wicked and completely destroyed his followers. Your arrows pierced the commander of his army. That's probably a reasonable interpretation. So again, it reads, talking of God, you struck down the leader of the wicked. And that's for sure. The man who heads up the beast empire will be struck down by God and completely destroyed his followers, whether that's 20 or 100 or a million. Your arrows pierced the commander of his army. Okay, moving on now. Still halfway through verse 14. They came out like a whirlwind to scatter me. Their rejoicing was like feasting on the poor in secret. And you know, Habakkuk says, you know, that these nations were coming out against us, against Israel, like a whirlwind to scatter us. They were rejoicing and rubbing their hands in glee. It was a feast to them to attack America and Britain and to get access to the treasures and wealth of our nations. You walked through the sea with your horses, through the heap of great waters. But, you know, Habakkuk saw God in action. Verse 16. When I heard, and Habakkuk is now just mulling over all he's heard from God, God's two answers, the first answer, and then the detailed five woes, and even seeing some of this here. When I heard, says Habakkuk, my body trembled. It just shook. Habakkuk was physically, you know, moved. His knees were knocking because it was just frightening to consider. My lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered my bones, and I trembled or shook in myself, that I might rest in the day of trouble, or the great tribulation. When he comes up to the people, he will invade them with his troops. So Habakkuk has these flashbacks to this coming invasion of the Babylonian Empire, and in our day we can have our little bit of imagination thinking of America and Britain in years to come. We've seen a tiny, pinprick, the 9/11 scenario, the World Trade Center, 3,000 people killed in one day, a great amount of grief and horror perpetrated by a few madmen. But we're talking here about something which is thousands and ten thousands of times worse than that. So poor old Habakkuk, you know, he's deeply distraught. These, after all, are his people, his family, the nation he loves, you know, God's own people as he sees them, and they're going to come up and invade. And invade implies to cut to pieces. So it's a frightening prospect that Habakkuk sees, and that's why his body trembles and his voice is shaking, and he feels like his whole insides are decaying. That I might rest, it says, in the day of trouble, this coming day of great distress. Well, other prophets have foreseen the same thing. Let's turn to Jeremiah chapter 30 and read verse 7. Jeremiah 30. And read verse 7. Alas, said Jeremiah, for that day is great, so that none is like it, and it is the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it, after, of course, he's been in it. So, you know, Jeremiah sees the time in the future. In fact, let's back up a bit to verse 5. That brings in that other word. For thus says the Eternal, we have heard a voice of trembling. Remember Habakkuk? He said his body trembled. His voice quivered and trembled. We've heard a voice of trembling, of fear, and not of peace. Ask now, verse 6, and see whether a man is ever in labor with child. So why do I see every man, with his hands on his loins like a woman in labor, and all faces turn pale? Why is everybody frightened and trembling and nervous and anxious and upset? Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is the time of Jacob's trouble, Israel's trouble, Britain America's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. So there's a combination of trembling in the time of Jacob's trouble. Let's turn to Daniel chapter 12, and we read verse 1. Daniel 12. And verse 1. So Jeremiah was himself, I guess, quite upset when he saw in prophecy what was coming. Verse 1 of Daniel 12. At that time Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation even to that time. A time of trouble, a day of trouble, as Habakkuk saw, and he was looking at the identical self-same period as Jeremiah, as Daniel. And at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. So, yes, Israel shall be delivered, the people of God will be delivered, but there's a day of trouble coming, such as has never been on the earth until that day, and as Jesus himself said, except those days get shortened, no flesh would be saved alive. So back to Habakkuk, chapter 3. And so verse 16, you know, Habakkuk talks of his body trembling, his voice quivering, that I might rest, he says, in the day of trouble. That's the same day of trouble that Jeremiah saw, that Daniel saw, that others of the prophets saw. Nahum refers to it. When he comes up to our people, he will invade with his troops and cut in pieces. A horrific time are coming. And so on to verse 17. And really, Habakkuk has been pondering all of this. He's been dramatically affected by the visions he's seen, by God's answers to his questions. The whole picture is now really in front of him. And remember Habakkuk in chapter 1, God pointed out to him that, frankly, you won't believe this, Habakkuk. You nor your fellows, all of you lack faith. You don't believe the words I say. And, of course, in Habakkuk chapter 2 and in verse 4, we said that the just shall live by his faith. And God was trying to get, perhaps, a message home to Habakkuk that it's important, Habakkuk, to have faith. It's important to put your trust in me. It's important to believe me. If you don't, you're in serious trouble. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. So I guess all of that's been running through Habakkuk's mind. And it does seem, as we get to verse 17 and 18, that perhaps the message did get home. Because in verses 17 and 18, we do see quite a strong statement of faith from the prophet Habakkuk. Verse 17. Though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail, and the fields yield no food. And just a moment, this does not look at all good. What, the fig tree, no more blossoms? There's no fruit on the vines, all the grapes are gone. The olive isn't producing any olive oil. There's nothing coming out of the fields, no more food, no more wheat, corn, no more fruit. Though the flock be cut off from the fold, no sheep out there, and there be no herd in the stalls, I mean, this is dire. Everywhere you look physically, it's disaster. Yet, I will rejoice in the eternal, I will joy in the God of my salvation. And Habakkuk says, nope, I will walk from now on by faith and not by sight. I don't care. There may be no figs on the fig tree, there may be no oranges on the orange tree, no bananas on the banana tree, the fields may be barren, not a stick of wheat out to be found anywhere, no cucumbers anywhere, not a sheep or a lamb to be seen for 100 miles, all the stalls in the barns are empty, no more cows, no more chickens running around. I don't care. I don't care at all. I will not be moved by what I see, I will not be moved by what I hear. I will rejoice in the eternal, I will joy in the God of my salvation, I will walk by faith and not by sight, which is a remarkable turnaround, a sense, for Habakkuk. And of course, it's quite an encouraging scripture there. Now, you do look at that reference in verse 17 to the fact that there's nothing growing anywhere, and no cattle anywhere, and that could be a reference to perhaps the effect of the nuclear devastation or other types of weapons of mass destruction, because there are some, and there's no question that they will be used. So it looks, Habakkuk in vision looks around and says, there'll be nothing anywhere. But despite that, my trust is in my God. And for the man who'd been perhaps slightly criticized in chapters 1 and 2 for not possessing much faith, it was a great amount of repentance, I guess, on Habakkuk's part, that he finally came to that point of saying, yes, I will have faith, I will believe, I will trust in my God, no matter what happens around me. And for you and I, of course, we should be in a similar sort of situation. If we hold our place there for a moment, just turn to Psalms 91. Psalms 91. Because there may well come a time when you and I have to see the most amazing, dramatic, and frightening incidents around us, but stand quietly in faith and rejoice in the God of our salvation. Psalms 91, starting in verse 1. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Eternal, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in Him I will trust. And that's, of course, what Habakkuk came to see. Nope, he said, God is my refuge, He is my fortress, my God, in Him I will trust, irrespective of what happens around me. And look at what happens here, verse 3. Surely He shall deliver you from the snare or the trap of the fowler, and from the perilous pestilence. He shall cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you shall take refuge. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid of the terror, or the terrorist, by night, nor of the arrow that flies by day, or we could say the missile that flies by day, nor of the pestilence that walks in darkness, you know, the bubonic plagues that people make in laboratories, nor the destruction that lays waste at noonday, destroying the vines and the fields and the herds and the flocks. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you. Only with your eyes shall you look and see the reward of the wicked, but it won't come near you, because you have made the Eternal, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your habitation. No evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near your dwelling. So there's the time of enormous, terrifying events, but to the man or woman of God, who dwells in the secret place of the Most High, under the shadow of the Almighty, missiles, plagues, pestilences, dramatic death of 10,000 people, plagues, no worry, because we have our faith in God. As Habakkuk said, I will rejoice in the Eternal, I will join the God of my salvation, or we could say, I will join the God of my deliverance, because that's also implied. So back to Habakkuk chapter 3, and we're obviously closing in now. We'll get one more passage we might turn to. Verse 19, the Eternal God is my strength. He will make my feet like deer's feet. Not literally, of course, we're still in a song, poetry, but you know what deer are like. They're very nimble. They can prance and dance and leap and run very quickly. He will make me walk on my high hills. So Habakkuk, after some 3 chapters of, shall we say, rather bad news, rather frightening news, and a whole host of plagues, pestilences, diseases, bloodshed, the invasion and almost complete destruction of his people, he ends really in a very positive voice. He looks there and says, frankly, God is my strength. He's the one who gives me strength and power. He will make me ultimately successful. And he's talking really, of course, also on behalf of the people of Israel. There's no doubt about it that when God restores Israel after all these events take place, after the day of trouble is over, once the nations of Babylon have been corrected, once the whole world has been corrected, then in those days, you know, Israel once again will walk in the high places of the earth. Israel then will be close to their God and Creator. Israel then will be an example to the rest of the world, not like today, when Hollywood is an example of perversion and corruption and immorality to the world through its movies. But in the world tomorrow, America and Britain will be a right example, a good example, a noble example to the whole world. And then indeed, they will be the premier nations of the entire earth, and all nations will come up to Jerusalem to find out, how do we live? Let's find out more about what makes these nations so extremely successful, so prosperous, so happy, so joyous. So yes, in the fullness of time, says Habakkuk, you know, I and my people will be walking on the high hills of the earth. And then, of course, he finishes it off by saying to the musician how he should actually play this particular song. But before we leave Habakkuk entirely, let's turn to Psalms chapter 77. Because having seen the song there that Habakkuk wrote, I think we can see much of the terminology appearing over here in Psalms 77. The same thought processes. And remember that Habakkuk was at one point really very frightened, very distressed by what he saw coming. But then he looked back and he remembered the God of old. He remembered the God who came from Mount Sinai, how he delivered ancient Israel miraculously and powerfully and fed them and gave them water in the wilderness and led them to their kingdom and gave them peace and prosperity in their land. And he realized that that same God, with that glorious power and might, would do the same again for his people in the future. Let's pick up the story here in Psalms 77, and we'll see perhaps much of the same thinking going on. Verse 7, will the Lord cast off forever, says the psalmist, and will he be favorable no more? Has he given up on his people? Has his mercy ceased forever? Has his promise failed forevermore? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his tender mercies? Selah, meaning pause and think about that for a moment. And the psalmist is saying, well, things are going to get so grim, so bad, so frightening, and the months are going to move into a year and 2 years that almost, unless you really do have faith in God's word, you're going to wonder about, will God ever relent? Has he actually forgotten to be merciful? And remember how Habakkuk said, you know, in wrath, don't forget to be merciful. Verse 10, and I said, this is my anguish, but I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. And so often when we're in trouble, it's good to look back at the God and what he's done for Israel in the past, what he's done for his people in the past, what he's done often for you and I in the past. I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the works of the Eternal. Surely I will remember your wonders of old. That's precisely what spurred Habakkuk into his song. I will also meditate on all your work and talk of your deeds. Your way, O God, is in the sanctuary. Who is so great a God as our God? This is the God that came, remember, from Mount Sinai, from Mount Paran. You are the God who does wonders. You have declared your strength among the peoples. You have with your arm redeemed your people, the sons of Jacob and Joseph. The waters saw you, O God. The waters saw you. They were afraid. The depths also trembled. Remember, the deep held its hands up on high. We read that in Habakkuk. The clouds poured out water. The skies sent out a sound. Your arrows also flashed about. And we saw reference to that in Habakkuk. The voice of your thunder was in the whirlwind. The lightnings lit up the world. Would that be God's glittering spears? The earth trembled and shook. Your way was in the sea, your path in the great waters, and your footsteps were not known. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. And I guess there's probably many other places we could find where, you know, God's intervention was sung by men of old and women of old, looking back in God's great power and might and majesty, and how time and time again he delivered and rescued his people. Well, the good news for Habakkuk is that God is faithful to the oaths he took for the tribes of Israel. God will in the future intervene and deliver the peoples of America and Britain, and in a bigger sense, frankly, deliver the whole world from its tyranny to oppression, to war, to disease, and of course, the ultimate terrorist, who is Satan, the devil. And it's only a couple of weeks away before we'll be keeping the Day of Atonement and looking at the comeuppance that belongs to Satan in due season. Well, okay, brethren, that concludes our study of the book of Habakkuk. So hopefully we found that quite useful. It's a short book, took us three sessions, but hopefully we've got a good outline of it. I will not promise that all the comments I made are 100% accurate, but I think there's many indications that we've tied together scriptures that they'll look broadly as though they support one another. And the ultimate test of the pudding, so to speak, is in a few years' time, which might be 1 year or 2 years or 5 years, that as these things do come to pass, we'll see them working out in actuality, in reality, and at that stage we'll find out just how close this study was to the truth. Well, with that, brethren, we'll conclude the Bible study for today.